Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Father Noah Carter, pastor of Holy Cross in Kernersville, North Carolina. And with the present health orders in our state and communities, churches around the globe are finding ways to reach into the home through technology. And one of the ways that we've tried to do that here at Holy Cross is through podcasting and videocasting reflections throughout the week. And every now and then again, I like to break away from the daily gospel and focus on a more thematic topic. Today, I wanted to focus on mental health. And of course, we know the many reasons for that. First of all, there's a lot of fear and anxiety going on in the world. And secondly, through confessions, conversations, phone calls, emails, I can see the depression, heaviness, and sometimes a chaotic, if you will, self-realization that's a result of our local stay-at-home orders. So I reached out to a friend and, in a certain sense, a colleague, because we worked on different projects together over the last few years. And I'm joined today by Tyler Kramer, who's a Catholic therapist in North Charlotte. So I met Tyler and his wife when they moved here to North Carolina, and they began assisting at their own parish with the youth ministry program. So, Tyler, thanks for being here and making the time to chat with me. Are you and your family, how are you guys faring through all this?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. You know, I think that COVID's impacting everyone on a personal level. There's the global impact that everyone's kind of having, but I think for some of us, it's impacting much more personally. And so my family's doing well. My immediate family's doing really well. My extended family, there is a chance that some people may have corona. So we're trying to keep them in prayers, trying to be there, like be supportive, that type of thing. But yeah, I think that there is definitely an impact that we're seeing even in our own communities, at this point.
Yeah. So for those of for those who are watching and don't know you, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, especially about your passion for mental health and kind of your journey into this career?
Sure, absolutely. So, all right. So my name is Tyler Kramer. I'm a licensed clinical mental health counselor associate. So I began in the field. I actually went to Franciscan University of Steubenville for my undergraduate, and I got my master's there as well, so for my graduate degree. Graduated in 2015 for my undergrad, in 2017 with my graduate. I mean, to be completely honest, I just felt called to get into the field. I originally from Chicago. I went to an all-guys college prep Catholic military school, and that's quite a mouthful. It's called Marmion Academy. And, you know, when I graduated from Marmion, I had one thought, and that was to go to Franciscan. I felt called almost, applied to one college and decided that psychology is going to be my major, and got great formation at Franciscan and really just kind of found a passion. I couldn't put my finger on it completely and why I felt called to it. I know I think everyone's family has a little bit of fun in it, I like to say. And so I couldn't, you know, deny that there was inspiration from just family, cousins, things like that. But I think my mom really kind of had a touch with people and really kind of was always a really good listener. And so if I had to get a guess that came from anyone, I think my mom kind of pushed me on the path. But yeah, that's kind of how I would answer that.
Thanks. And so, you know, you're at a private practice there in North Charlotte, Wisdom Integrative Counseling. When we say a Catholic therapist, we certainly don't mean that you only see Catholic clients. So in your own understanding, what does a Catholic understanding of the human person bring to the practice of counseling and therapy?
Sure, absolutely. So what we really focus on is integrative holistic healing, right? So our approach is mind, body, and spirit, which is a reflection of the Trinity. And so I think a lot of therapists will really focus on treating the mind, they'll focus on treating the body, which is phenomenal. But when we leave out that spiritual component, I feel like there's something lacking, something missing. And so we offer the opportunity to address that. Now, some clients don't prefer to address that, which we can work with what we can work with, right? But we really find that people that do seek the deepest level of healing is when we can address those areas. So I really feel like it's a great opportunity for us to talk about, you know, things from a Catholic perspective, right? That there is a right and wrong, that there's moral guidance, that we can focus on, you know, the Ten Commandments, these types of things that kind of orientate how we approach certain things that we may encounter.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for that answer, because, you know, we see, especially in the medical professional fields and also the, you know, mental health fields as well, a lot of times there's, it's hard to find a therapist that understands the necessity of the spiritual component of life. And, you know, we've had a lot of different opportunities to talk shop, and, sure. You know, your own passion and excitement that you have to help heal others has always been something really impressive to me. So, first I want you to kind of paint a picture from the perspective of mental health. What are you and your colleagues, in the mental health field? What are you seeing in the past weeks, and what's kind of the situation on the ground?
Sure. So, you know, what's interesting is that I actually spoke with a couple colleagues throughout the country prior to COVID, the encounter with COVID, and really it kind of hitting our communities. And what we consistently were seeing was anxiety and fear. Mm-hmm. We see depression and other things as well, but there was this pervasive element of kind of underneath, kind of hidden fear that was just permeated through our society. And so when coronavirus came, when COVID-19 came, we see that almost exacerbated. Like, it really kind of just exploded in the community. And so I think what comes into my office right now is there's a lot of fear, but it's fear of the unknown, like uncertainty. And unfortunately, when we have uncertainty, it also starts to kind of trigger other things in our lives that may have happened. So whether this be traumas or difficulties with relationships, it almost kind of itches at those old wounds. And so we're kind of seeing the old wounds kind of creep up a little bit more, but it's kind of ladled with just uncertainty, unknown. Am I going to be okay? Right? That type of thing.
Okay. Yeah. And it has been a radical shift in how we're living life. Many being, you know, as we know, sheltering in place for the most part. And the uncertainty that you speak of about economy, people are experiencing, you know, the severe isolation, the question about jobs. You know, it's like we suddenly slammed on the brakes. But from the perspective of mental health, could this be considered a sort of trauma? I ask because the media is throwing around the notion that people suddenly unemployed or with uncertainties, you know, that they're calling in and asking insurance to cover therapy because of PTSD. Can you give me an idea about what you define as a trauma and to what degree these experiences that we're having could be considered traumatic, if at all?
Sure. So that's kind of a tricky question, right? So the way that we medically organize what is PTSD, what is not, is through what we call the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Illness, right? So we're in the fifth edition. And so there's criteria of like flashbacks, avoidance of a trigger, these different types of things that one would say, okay, this is a clinical presentation of PTSD. Now, when you look at a situation where anyone goes from one kind of quality of life, right? Life looks like this, and all of a sudden that's abruptly shifted. I would say that's traumatic for everyone. The thing is that everyone kind of processes that and like handles that in a different way. So this is going to impact adults much differently than it would for a teenager or for a young child. And so it's definitely fair to say that this is traumatic for people. I mean, how could it not be? Life has changed so drastically. But the way that that will impact them is going to be different from each age group. And I can answer more on that if you'd like. But yeah, that's what I would say so far.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, that we all handle changes in life differently, and when there's a radical change, you know, we find different ways to cope and things like that, and especially in times of uncertainty. You know, millions are switching over to teleconferencing, and when we spoke a couple of weeks ago, you told me that the counselors at the practice where you are have, for the many clients, switched over to telehealth. Churches are trying to keep people connected through live masses, classes, video conferencing, but the response is always the same. People are saying, you know, it's functional, it's nice to be connected, but, you know, it's not the same. Mm-hmm. So from the perspective of mental health, can you articulate why, like, worshiping from home is not the same as gathering together, or why technological means of communication fall short of what we need, why we need to have face-to-face interaction?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that philosophically, it's almost kind of written in our human nature, right? That we are a social creature. And even when you look at babies that are kind of abandoned nursing homes, they don't have, they struggle a lot because we need that nurturing, we need that connection. And so I think technology can kind of facilitate that in some degree, but I think that there's almost a spiritual kind of connection, a deep kind of like human nature type of connection that we encounter when we're with someone face to face. And it's beautiful that we have the technology to call people, right? It's not back in the 80s where you have to go to the payphone and call people and hope that they're there, right? We have the ability to FaceTime someone, to call someone, to use WhatsApp, these different types of applications, but we do miss that human element, that face-to-face, that connection, which I think is almost in our human nature to have.
So with ordinary routines being, you know, of being out and about and work schedules and things like that being taken away from us or shifted, I can tell that many are feeling a growing burden or a weight. And it may not be clinical depression, as you talked about being able to like diagnose it according to the diagnostics, the DSM.
Right.
But certainly there's a sadness that's weighing a lot of people down. Mm-hmm. When someone becomes sad or even mildly depressed because of a huge shift in the way that they're living in the world around them, are there ways to kind of stave off those effects?
Sure, absolutely. And I would say that, you know, it depends on each person. So what we would call that, like actually medically, would be called an adjustment disorder. And you can see an adjustment disorder with either mixed anxiety, depressed mood, or one or the other, and that type of thing, where males will tend to be a little more aggressive or not hostile, but you kind of see more of an outward expression of that. So medically, that's how we would kind of assess it. But yeah, absolutely. I think that it really, it kind of depends on each person where they're at, right? So I would give different advice to families and married couples that I would for some of the individually. And so would you prefer that I kind of approach each one of those categories, or how would you like me to answer that question?
Yeah, I mean, some of the questions that I was thinking about did have some of those. So why don't you just, you know, fill in those gaps, and then we'll ask some more pointed questions if we need to.
Sure, absolutely. So I guess let's talk about married couples and the family first. And so I think one of the things that we talk about is that, you know, grace flows from the sacrament of marriage, right? So grace flows from the sacraments. And so for a married couple, I think one of the things that probably comes up in many people's minds with when it comes to families, right, is, are my children going to be okay? Is it going to be okay? And you know what? I think that that's a beautiful concern. But when we only focus on the children, we miss the opportunity to focus on our marriage, right? And grace kind of flows from the marriage. And children are very observant. And so when mom and dad are stressed, even though they may not be able to articulate that, they see that, right? And so one of the most powerful things that you can do if you're in a family is to focus on your marriage, right? This is an opportunity for you to figure out, hey, honey, how do you deal with stress? When you're overwhelmed, is there something that I can do to support you? Because a lot of times when we look at ourselves, we may notice that maybe this is bothering us. This is impacting us in a certain way. If it's impacting us, maybe it's impacting our spouse. And so, you know, you can't always read minds. I obviously cannot read my wife's body, and she can't read mine. And so it helps to have that conversation, like, hey, how are you doing? Is there anything that I can do to be there for you, rather than trying to guess, this is what they need, this is what they need. Just facilitate that conversation. So go ahead.
Yeah, I've spoken a bit with different people that I know who are working in law enforcement, and they've said that there's been a spike in domestic violence calls during this time. You know, it's like couples, you know, finally have to live with each other,
right?
Rather than, you know, going about their own routines and only, you know, they're spending much more time together. Do you have any recommendations for couples who might be experiencing the tensions, difficulties, or even conflict in the home? Any ways to find ways to communicate better and to diffuse conflict?
Sure. So there's two things that come to mind, right? The first being that, I think I kind of mentioned this earlier, is that the old wounds are kind of coming up. So if your husband does something or your wife does something that bothers you a little bit more, it may not be the actual thing that they did that's bothering you. It may be something that you're kind of being reminded of. And so it's helpful to kind of check that. Am I mad at you because you did this right now? Or is it something from the past? And that is helpful to kind of differentiate. And so obviously those things need to be addressed and worked through. And is the best time to work at that during a crisis? Yes and no for certain couples. It just depends on, you know, the ability to do that. But yeah, I think that's one of the main things to kind of focus on it in that regards. And Father, can you repeat the second part of your question? I know there's another part that I was going to mention.
Just ways to diffuse those conflicts or tensions that they seem to be boiling to the surface.
Yeah, absolutely. So with communication skills, I think one of the main things that I try to focus on with couples is, right after a couple says something, right? So let's say a wife or a husband says something. Sometimes the message that they're trying to send isn't always the one that's received. And so what's really helpful to say is, honey, I'm hearing you say this. And when you say that, it gives them the opportunity to say, yes, that's exactly what I mean. And then you can talk about it from there. Or say, no, that's not what I was saying. I was really trying to say this. And what I've actually seen in couples is that's been transformative, because they've perhaps gone their whole lives thinking, you know, my wife always says this and she always means this, but in reality, no, that's not true. Or my husband always does this and this is what he means, you know, but that's not always necessarily true. And so it's a small little communication technique that has a massive impact.
Yeah, that's actually a really great point of I've seen that as well, when couples, you know, will come and say, and they've realized that they've been talking past each other for a long time. And there's, you know, there's different ways around that, but yeah, to repeat that back and there's a lot of times, you know, you and I have spoken about this before, that, you know, there has to be with couples an ability to be vulnerable with each other,
right?
And be very quick to forgive if all of a sudden they really, because when you're vulnerable with your spouse, you know, some couples have a fear of being hurt. Yeah. But that just comes with the adventure of marriage and being very quick to humble oneself and forgive. In communication.
Yeah, and the communication styles are so different, right? So men statistically have shown they love side-by-side time, right? So that's why you'll see like men playing video games side-by-side next to each other, or sports, or it's like, what are we going to do? That's how men relate. Where women, well, and this isn't like a proven, this is absolute science, but women love to connect, right? To share common interests, to share kind of different experiences, right? To have like a sameness, right? And so sometimes women just want to be in relation, or men want to do. And, you know, I think it's helpful to do both things, right? What are you going to do? What am I going to do? I always ask my wife, She wants to hang out. I'm like, all right, what are we going to do? And she's like, I just want to be with you. And it boggles my mind, but it is really, there is some truth to that.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that I always tell people who want to grow in holiness is that if they don't have an established rhythm or rule of life, that they need to establish that, because, you know, God is a God of order and desires an ordered heart and life. And, you know, we've spoken about this before when you say, well, what is mental health? Well, it's order. And mental, you know, a mental illness is something where our mental faculties are disordered. Right. So this time more than ever requires that we follow a daily routine, because it's not really imposed upon us, right, with work and school and things like that, all those schedules changing. And so on the aspect of the spirit, as you said before, you know, mind, body, and spirit, the faith requires a certain schedule to our prayer life. And the church even gives us a certain schedule to the sacramental life, right? So we have to confess our sins at least once a year and go to Mass once a week, right? Those things aren't as available to us now with the weekly Mass, unfortunately. But what are some elements within that routine or rule of life that people should incorporate in these times to help improve or keep their mental health stable?
Sure. I mean, order is so important, because, I mean, if you think about it, this conversation that we're having, we could not have it if there wasn't some order to the language, right? Mm-hmm. Or our bodies would fall apart instantly if our bodies weren't ordered together. And so order is really, truly an aspect of that, which is good, right? That is just of God. And so if we have, you know, no order to our lives, we're going to start to feel a kind of a disconnect, right? Mm-hmm. From God, from others. And we really can kind of fall into a depression. I always kind of consider depression like a bad roommate, right? They love for you never to go outside, the lights to be off, and you to be isolated. And anytime you try to break that, they kind of pull you back down. And so one of the most important things to do to kind of break off some of that anxiety, some of that depressive feeling, right, is to have some order, right? Mm-hmm. And you can think of it mind, body, and spirit. What is one thing that I can orientate my mind around to do in terms of prayer? So having a set prayer time for the day. What is one time that we can get outside? You don't have to do this crazy physical activity, right? It's not the end of the year gym thing that everyone does, right? New Year's resolution. 20 minutes of sunshine, it helps kind of defend off that, like, that depression. Even if 20 minutes of time with the family, just doing something outside, right? And then mentally, what is something that I can do to bring order to myself? And so, you know, with order, what I really recommend is for people to clean a room, right? Or to clean one thing each day. Because if you think about it, the world is kind of chaotic. And when we wake up in chaos, we can't really bring order to the world. It's like we're bringing chaos to chaos. And so having a clean room or having a clean area in our house allows us to bring order to the chaos. And I think that's so powerful.
Yeah, I think it was Saint Thérèse of Lisieux said something similar to the cleanly or the order of your room, it reflects the order of your soul or something, or is the window to your soul. Mm-hmm. You know, so if somebody's always messy all the time, it probably means they're not internally ordered,
right?
Either.
So yep. We use that as a diagnostic too. So when someone comes in and their room's just trashed, oftentimes it means that there's not order within them. And if people think that there's a huge problem and you go, well, what's your room look like? And there's only like one or two things wrong. It's like, well, maybe it's not as big as you think it is. Maybe there's just a little bit there. And so it's a healthy gauge, not a perfect science, but a healthy gauge.
Right. Wow. That's interesting. I think everyone's living already, as you said, you saw this heightened stress and anxiety before all of these lockdown orders took effect. And everyone, I guess, lives in a heightened stress situation anyways, depending on where their priorities are and such. And, you know, for example, I don't personally fear, you know, material devastation. I don't really fear catching the virus, though I try and take the precautions so that I don't spread it. But personally, like in this time, my heightened stress level is because I've had to adjust my focus areas. I've had to adjust where I apply my energies and my priorities. And so like my stress comes from like having to readjust. I might drop something, I might miss something or let something fall through the crack. So, you know, everybody's trying to cope with stress and anxiety at home. A bunch of guys could get together and go for a hike or something. Well, they can't really do that now.
Socially distant.
So what are some ways, do you have any recommendations for ways that we can cope with stress and anxiety while we're at home?
Sure. Well, I guess what I'm hearing you kind of bring up elements is a little bit of fear, right? And what anxiety really is that it's a lack of, not trust, Like there's a belief that things will not be okay, right? And when we look at kind of clinically and from a Catholic perspective, God is here in the present, right? And God gives us enough strength for each day, right? For this moment, because he's here and that's ordered. And so a lot of times when we think about the future, we're going, this is impossible. And I think that that would almost be natural to feel that way because God's not in that moment, right? God's ordered, so he's not in this possible future. He's with you here right now. And a lot of times when God speaks to us, it's what can we do in this moment? And so with anxiety, what we really see is that when people are living in the future, like a potential future, and they're staying there, that's when we really see the separation. That's when we see this deep anxiety, this deep fear. And when we see people kind of bouncing from a potential future to a wound from the past and back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, that is the recipe for despair, right? For a really loss of hope, for a true loss of hope. And so I think the idea is to not so much focus about what will happen, right? The news always tells us there's the next problem, the next problem, the next problem. It's about what is going on right now. What can you control in this moment?
You know, in this time, when you talk about, you know, going from, you know, future to past wound, future to past wound, things like that, and it can cause some more anxiety. You know, a lot of people find themselves a little bit extra time on their hands. And I wasn't planning on taking this conversation this direction, but I think you opened the door for it. Is you know, some of the projects that you and I have worked on in the past have been about forgiveness, healing, the spiritual elements of that. So when people have a little bit more time for reflection and contemplation, can you give us just a really quick, maybe a quick way, just some suggestions briefly on what they can do to help maybe heal from past wounds that maybe they have too much time to think about these things these days.
Right. You know, I think that, you know, I want to demystify what forgiveness looks like, because I think a lot of people think forgiveness is this one and done, boom, I've forgiven, it's over. Right. And when we look at Jesus's life, like one of his whole missions was this journey of forgiveness. And Jesus was here for 33 years. And so sometimes I would say that bigger wounds, they need more time to forgive. That doesn't mean that we're not forgiving. It's a process. Right. And also forgiveness doesn't mean forgetting. Right. Because sometimes we remember these things. And so what I encourage people to do, I mean, there's different processes like the interior healing processes and so on and so forth. But I really think that there's a lot of power in having a journal and writing out the things that you are holding on to, and to just visualize letting each one of those things go and giving it to, like putting it at the foot of the cross, giving it to God. And if you can't forgive, let's say this whole thing, maybe you can forgive this little piece, right? And if you do that daily, it ends up becoming this beautiful gift that you can give to God. And that's the key, is that God wants us to take one step at a time, not this giant, enormous step. It's like running up the stairs. You'll trip and fall every time. I can't do it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you try to take two steps at once. Boom. Right. And so it's just one step at a time. If you can work towards forgiveness, find one little spot of forgiveness that you can give that day, today, and give that to God. Write it down and offer it up. Burn it. These different types of things that you can do, but really just one thing. That's the key. One thing at a time.
That's awesome. Yeah, I haven't heard it put that well before, and articulated that well about, you know, is there something from this event? Is there one part of it that I can start with? And that's a great point. Rather than trying to bite off more than we can chew, that also happens when we try and aim for these great heights of devotion. Right. And somebody says, "Well, I'm going to start making a holy hour every single day," and then they fail like the first day. And they're just like, well, this is too hard, I'm giving it up. Rather than starting with, I'm going to spend 15 minutes in quiet prayer. And then after they get that habit of saying, I'm now going to increase this to 20 minutes. I'm going to increase this to 30 minutes. Yeah. And to build a habit, not by saying, this is the goal, so I have to start right here. But what can I do to work up to it? Yeah.
Yeah. And you reach this risk of, this is where I am and this is where I should be. Right. And we call the tyranny of the shoulds in psychology, because when we do that, we always feel like we're failing. And it's like, this is who I should be. This is where I am. And it always makes us feel like we're not enough. And that's very depressing to kind of hear that message every day. Not enough, not enough. And so the idea isn't to look at this grandiose version of who you should be. Right. It's who you are. And if the guidance that people will give, that I will give, is that don't compare yourself to who you are right now and who you should be. That's not fair. Compare yourself to who you are today and who you were yesterday, and try to do one thing, only one thing, to make yourself a little bit better today. And what you'll end up seeing is this very beautiful kind of growth that looks like this over time, rather than the good, bad, good, bad, good, bad.
Yeah, many times we don't see that growth day to day, you know, in our lives. But when we look back, if we are intentionally focused on what I'm doing today better than yesterday, then we can look back a couple months from now and say, whoa, you know, I am a different, you know, I'm living life a little differently and responding. So I want to bring up, you know, we spoke about parents, but also, you know, I know that you've done some work with youth before, yeah, in group counseling and also one-on-one. Right now it's already hard to be a young person, but with all the pressures and such that are on them. But now there's that even greater stress on top of the normal pressures of life. And I see some of our youth, especially in our high school and some in our youth group, there was already this bundle of stress, but now like the home is now a pressure cooker. That's getting ready to just kind of, you know, the top's about ready to fly off. Do you have any ways specifically for our young people to take care of their mental health at home? And we can come back to this one if you want, but then also a message to parents, like for them to keep in mind about how their kids might be, how they might be able to treat their kids through this time, recognizing those pressures.
Absolutely. So yeah, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because I was like, oh, we got to get to this as well, right? Let's start with teenagers, right? So teenagers perceive the world much differently than adults would. And that's why sometimes when adults are like, it's not that big of a deal, right? But to that teenager, it is a big deal. And I think that's something important to consider, right? What we're seeing with teens right now, and even for some of them, it's like they're going to miss prom. They're not going to graduate with their friends. They didn't get that chance to say goodbye. So there's a lot of like emotion that carries. And, you know, during that developmental cycle, friends is something that's very important, right? So we think teenagers, we're going to push boundaries, right, to figure out who I am. They start to ask this question, who am I, what is my calling? But you really don't see that internalization of that until your young adult stage, right? So college, that type of thing. So right now it's, how do I externally identify who I am, right? Different clothes, hang out with these people and that type of thing. But that process has almost been kind of taken away. And so they're kind of, many of them probably sitting at home kind of going, oh my gosh, like, what do I do? Right. And I think that what I would recommend for teenagers, really, I think there's beauty in art, right? Rather than be just kind of scribbling, whether it be in music, learning an instrument, any type of art can really be helpful for them. But also, you know, a lot of teens will go to other teens because they don't feel judged. They feel understood. And sometimes parents feel like they can't connect with their teens because the worlds are so different. I mean, really, worlds have changed so quickly. And so what I would recommend for parents and teens, right, is to have that open expression, right? When we look at the divine mercy, we have that open hand where Jesus, right, is just extending his hand out for us to grab onto him. And I ask that parents kind of almost mimic that, where it's not like, tell me about everything that's going on in your life, because teens will shut off and be like, no, get out of my room, right? But it's this idea of, hey, I'm here if you want to talk to me. And with that open invitation, it may not be taken initially, but over time when they feel like they can talk, right, then they'll come. And the key is to really avoid judgment, right, but to hear them out and hear them from where they're at, meet them where they're at, just like Jesus, meet us where we're at, because they don't have that ability anymore to go to their friends and just talk without any judgment. So that's what I would say with teenagers. You know, with children right now, there's a lot of uncertainty. And I'm talking like, think like 12 and 11 and younger, right? So that age. And children are so observant. And so if the news is on in the background all the time, they're going to keep hearing this. It's not, we're not safe. I'm not safe. I'm not safe. And so I had a kid come in here going, is my mom going to die? Right? It was a real session. They came in there crying. Is my mom going to die? Is my family going to be okay? Wow. Are my favorite authors going to die? And so we looked at the statistics and like, they're going to be okay. We're looking at this, right? But one of the things that I found to be so helpful is giving children something to look forward to, right? Whether it be a new family tradition or a game night, or even them getting an allowance for doing their chores. When they feel like they can work towards something, it gives them something to look forward to. Like the days don't blend in, this is progress. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just, I can make $1 or to $5 or whatever a week if I do all my chores and I can save up for something I want. For a child, that gives them hope, right? That they can work towards something. It's very, very powerful. And so I just wanted to add that about children real quick.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think there's any other areas that maybe we haven't touched upon that would be helpful?
I would say that I think that there are a lot of people out there that have faced some type of abuse, whether it be very deep type of trauma or like a sexual abuse. And I think that for individuals right now, I think that this time is especially hard, right? Because when we are abused in some capacity, we try to protect ourselves, But right now it feels like the things that are normal that we used to protect ourselves with, it's gone. And so I think a lot of people are feeling very vulnerable. And so if there is someone out there that has been abused or is really looking for that extra comfort, know that you're not alone, that people are praying for you, and that we are going to get through this together. But know that, you know, for people like that, that are encountering that, this is extra hard for them. And so even husbands, if that's something that has been in your family, or wives that's been in your family, or just in general, just understand that there is a little bit of patience needed with people that have gone through some severe trauma. And I would say that is important to touch on.
Good. Well, Tyler, thanks so much. I'm so happy that we were able to have this conversation. I know a lot of people, as I said, as we kind of chatted about this before, it's an area where people are reporting sparsely upon, and very few people are getting concrete information out there. So I appreciate all just the concrete suggestions and your insights into all of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell your family I said hello, and certainly some of that extended family that you're worried about. We certainly know the prayers of the parishioners here at Holy Cross, okay?
Thank you, Father. It means so much.
All right. Well, God bless you.
God bless, Father. Thank you.